Good afternoon. The time is 12:06, and you're tuned to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. I'm Sarah D'Elia. If you'd like to join our conversation today, 260-452-1185 is the number to give us a call at. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're focusing our whole show today on Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and to help me lead that conversation, we have Stephen Miller, Director of Development and Communication of the YWCA in Fort Wayne, as well as Stephanie Feldman, the YWCA Case Coordinator, and Mary Claire Akers, the REACT Director for the Women's Bureau. Thank you all so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so, Stephen, let's talk. Let's start off with you. Explain to me a little bit about the YWCA for folks in Fort Wayne who may not be familiar with the organization, what kind of work you do, and what you do specifically there.
Well, the YWCA is an affiliate of the YWCA USA and International, and our mission is focused on eliminating racism, empowering women, freedom, justice, and dignity for all people. And within that, and especially during this month, one of our main programmings, we were the first domestic violence program in the state of Indiana and the oldest shelter in the state of Indiana. A lot of people don't realize we serve all of Northeast Indiana. Mm-hmm. In the outlying counties, we've been here for 118 years, but we're located here with our shelter here in Fort Wayne and our main administrative offices. Mm-hmm. Our programming, besides domestic violence, which is a complete continuum from preventative education all the way through crisis shelter, to community outreach programming, and then our final capstone program is what we call Steps to Success, which mm-hmm. is essentially after the crisis is over and looking at building that future based on self-sufficiency, education, career, the emotional healing, mm-hmm. and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. We also provide services to non-English speakers through our refugee and immigration programs, as well as racial justice. Mm-hmm.
Great. And Stephanie, I'm going to go down the line. Talk a little bit about your part at the YWCA here.
As the case coordinator, I work between the continuum of our services. Starts out at our women's shelter, where I talk to the different women and children there about our other programs. I then connect them with a case manager in either community programs or Steps to Success. Community programs is more focused on the immediate crisis, mm-hmm. and supporting them through that. So I'll connect the clients to a specific case manager and community programs. And then when they're out of the immediate crisis, the safety concerns are gone. I will then connect them with a Steps to Success case manager where they can focus on self-sufficiency and stability and living a violence-free life.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Mary Claire, you're representing the Women's Bureau today. Tell me a little bit about what the Women's Bureau does in Fort Wayne and your part there.
Okay, the Women's Bureau has two sections of the Women's Bureau. So we have Transitions, which is a program for women that have addictions and alcohol mm-hmm. issues, and they come in for residential programming. That program does deal with a lot of domestic violence and sexual assault. The other main program that we have is the REACT program, which is the program that I run. And that program has several outreach educators that work in the community to work on the primary prevention end of trying to get ahead of sexual assault and violence in homes. And then we have a clinical counselor that kind of does the retroactive work where when somebody's had some kind of a domestic violence or sexual assault that they can come get counseling. Mm-hmm. And then also that same counselor does secondary victims. So a secondary victim is somebody that has a family member, a friend, a girlfriend, whatever, that has been assaulted.
Mm-hmm. Great. So many, and these are just two of the wonderful organizations that we have locally that are helping not just women, but both men, women, children who have suffered from domestic violence, sexual violence, and helping them move forward and move on. And if you're just joining us today, we're spending the whole hour on Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And Steve, I'm going to start with you. Talk to me a little bit about why it's important that we have a whole month dedicated to the awareness of domestic violence. It's something that I kind of think, unless you know somebody or you yourself are a victim of it, you don't realize what a big deal it actually is.
And that's a really good point, Sarah. And the reason for a whole month is fortunately, it is a national recognized month. So our legislators and our government felt that it was important to bring recognition. But domestic violence has been one of those things that's always been a silent, mm-hmm. personal thing. not something you talked about, not something that went outside the front door. And so to bring awareness, to have the whole month as an opportunity to let people know. Many don't realize that one in four women will experience domestic violence sometime in their life, and one in 12 men will. Mm-hmm. It's underreported, one of the most unreported crimes in the United States, and especially for men because of the stigma, and we're still trying to overcome that stigma for women. Mm-hmm. So a month gives us an opportunity to take a time out for those that are serving, those that are recovering and living, moving on, like our Flowers on the River was, from domestic violence and moving towards a peaceful life without violence, and those who are still behind the closed doors. Most people, when they think of domestic violence, they're thinking of a black eye, a broken bone, and domestic violence covers many different realms. Mm-hmm. It's not just a bruise. In fact, there's a billboard in another state that I saw just recently that said, you know, that there doesn't have to be a bruise to be abused.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great, because I was going to ask, when we think of domestic violence, we think of seeing some kind of physical evidence. Mm-hmm. To say, oh, okay, that person was clearly abused, hit, but there's verbal of abuse, and I imagine that fits into the umbrella of domestic violence.
Yeah, and Stephanie could talk real well about this. Is we work with individuals in domestic violence. The first thing is it's a lot of people will think, well, he was just drunk, or she was just mad, or it's just a one thing. And so there's a whole component that goes to that is a mental condition that the abuser uses to create that environment and that self-esteem level and the image within that own person that's being abused, mm-hmm. that they can do what they do to them. And, you know, my favorite one, because being a man working in a woman's field, mm-hmm. and being a strong proponent of women's rights and speaking out for women, you know, I always hear guys talk about, you know, he's drunk and joking about that kind of stuff. But, you know, an abuser makes a decision. They aren't walking down the street beating people up when they're drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So when what makes the difference when he comes home and it doesn't like what's going on at home and the abuse happens?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'll defer to Stephanie, who can tell you even more in depth with even the people that we work in, mm-hmm. and the whole process that's built up in order for that abuse to take mm-hmm. place.
And Stephanie, you're kind of doing a lot of the hands-on interacting with folks that come to the YWCA. So what is your experience, or what do you think about having the whole month dedicated to Domestic Violence Awareness Month? I mean, you must see a ton of folks in our region that are coming to see you. So I would think that you would be a strong proponent for a whole month of this.
Absolutely. It's my favorite month of the year, for sure. Just to go off of what Steve said, I think the month is really important for another reason, and that is all of the victims or survivors that are out there who have never talked about what's happened to them. This month allows them to say, okay, this happens to other people. It happens to other men, other women, and maybe this will be a safe time to come out and share my story, help others, or allow me more time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great, and that's, I think, why we try so much to get the word out there about this month, so we can bring that awareness and help other people who haven't sought support for what they've gone through, to let them know that they're not alone. This happens to a lot of different people, mm-hmm. and that we care and we want to support them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So not just to raise awareness, but for also victims to speak up and share their own story and maybe help somebody else out that needs to come forward and get help themselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Mary Claire, I know that you're part in the Women's Bureau. You work a lot with victims of sexual assault and rape.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking a little bit about before the show, where sometimes domestic violence goes hand in hand with rape. Not all the time, but sometimes there is a correlation.
Yeah, we have clients that come in, and a lot of times these clients suffer from multiple issues of violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to kind of take that person at where they're at and kind of look at all the issues that are affecting them. So although we focus on sexual assault and sexual violence in our REACT program, often domestic violence will come into the picture mm-hmm. as well. So. Mm-hmm.
260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. We're spending the whole hour dedicated to talking about Domestic Violence Awareness Month here, this month of October. And to help us do that is Stephen Miller, Director of Development and Communication of the YWCA, as well as Stephanie Fieldman of the YWCA, and Mary Claire Akers, who is from the Women's Bureau. Steve, I wanted to go jump back to you real quick to talk, to get a little bit of a sense of how many people maybe the YWCA is seeing on a monthly basis because of domestic violence issues.
And it changes from month to mm-hmm. month. You'll see different high peaks, low peaks. Here a couple of weeks ago, our shelter was actually at maximum capacity. Wow. But statewide, the numbers that they often, in 2011, that was domestic violence served in cases of emergency mm-hmm. was over 6,186 women and 18 men. And with our shelter, typically on an average year, we'll serve about 750 women and men in the shelter that's mm-hmm. during that course of the year. Last year in 2011, we actually served two men. They don't actually stay in our shelter. We have another location that we keep them at. But another fact that comes in, and something that people often don't realize, is statewide last year in 2011, there were 62 deaths. And of those 62, nine of those occurred within Northeast Indiana, where we serve. Mm-hmm. So it's very prevalent. And these are the reported cases. These are the people who are actually seeking help, who have taken that step. And that's a very difficult step to take. And oftentimes that's the most dangerous step, is when that decision is made mm-hmm. that I need to do something and I need to leave or get out.
Right. And I that's a great segue, because I think it's important for anyone who's listening that is either unfortunately found themselves in a domestic relationship that is unhealthy, whether that's verbal abuse or domestic or physical abuse, to talk about some of those first steps that people can use right here in our listening area in the Northeast Indiana region. So Stephanie, let me start off with you. What are some of the good first steps that people need to take if they know that they are in an unhealthy relationship and they need assistance getting out of it?
Mm-hmm. The first thing I would say is trust your instincts. We tell our clients that constantly. If you don't think it's safe to leave, then it's probably not. So talking with somebody, whether it's a trusted friend or family member, or calling an agency like ours to talk to somebody about options, is really helpful. It's always great to have a couple different minds together when coming up with a safety plan or talking about financially supporting, you know, yourself or your children, where you're going to go. There's a lot of different factors involved that make it a very big choice mm-hmm. for the people in this situation. So I would definitely say trust your instincts and talk to someone and come up with a plan and figure out what you need to do to keep yourself and or your children safe as you move out of the relationship. It is a very dangerous time for the victim when moving out of that relationship, because that abuser loses that power and control mm-hmm. and they try to get it back through different measures. So having support of friends and family members that you can go to is very important. And if you don't have support through friends and family members, coming to an agency like ours here can help you with that.
Mm-hmm. I think you bring up an interesting point of a victim maybe feeling like they want to take the first steps, but they can't take the first steps because it's so unsafe leaving, either if they're living with their abuser. So I guess it's important to push yourself to make those steps and to give somebody a call. Is that even if, because you mentioned trusting your gut a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder, there must be kind of, I imagine, a great deal of conflict in somebody's mind who knows that they need to get out, but feels like they can't pick up the phone because it's unsafe to do so.
Absolutely. And we deal with that quite often. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think this month is important, because it can bring awareness to the people in these situations to say, okay, I'm not making this up. This is happening to me. I'm not going crazy. You know, this is really what I'm living with. And now I need to assess the situation and make steps to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. It's planning, it's evaluating all these different scenarios and different aspects of the relationship and coming up with a solid safety plan on how to move forward with that. And one of the great things that we offer on our website is a safety plan, to where we're going to have a sample safety plan that we as case managers can write up and show a person in a violent situation, okay, this is what a safety plan looks like. Here's a blank copy. Let's have you fill it out. Mm-hmm. Call us with questions. We'll help you with it. And it takes a lot of creativity mm-hmm. in some situations to help the victims get out of the relationship. So definitely a lot of planning, a lot of trust and support.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine the more people that are involved in getting out of an unsafe situation, the more complicated it could be. If there's not only, for example, a mother, but she has one or two children, I imagine navigating that is tricky.
Absolutely. And children are one of the biggest reasons why so many victims stay in abusive relationships. Mm. Everybody always asks the questions, well, why doesn't she just leave? There's a lot of answers to that question, and children are right at the top of the list because they want the children to have a family. Or, you know, he's a really good father, but he's not a good husband. Or she's a really good mom, but she's not a really good wife. Mm. So that definitely has a lot to play, especially leaving a very violent situation and the safety of the kids, whether they go to school or daycare or involved in activities. It can be very complicated, but it's something that we're here to help with mm-hmm. and that we can help people navigate through if they need that support.
And the costs, I would say, is probably a big part of it too, because if you have a dual income family and there are, you know, two working parents, even if one is abusive, sometimes you're completely reliant on that other income, whether they're the sole provider or they're even a partial provider. That makes it very difficult to leave, to mm-hmm. put money down on a new place, to mm-hmm. you know, get their kids enrolled in different schools and to move on and to mm-hmm. just relocate altogether.
Oh, yeah. Just the act of relocation has its expenses its own.
And that's one of those factors that the abuser uses, is that financial abuse, essentially, mm-hmm. is the control of the finances to keep that isolation, to keep right. you locked in. But Domestic Violence Awareness Month is so important because every time it gets out that this is going on, that somebody else is talking about it, that plants a seed in those who are experiencing that to go.
Absolutely.
There's a place to go. There's something to do. We had that on our Flowers on the River event, which is the event that we use to start off Domestic Violence Awareness Month every year, which was really, really very neat because the city turned the lights on the Martin Luther King Bridge purple for us that mm-hmm. night. Purple's the color for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. But we had a survivor there that actually spoke out and said, you know, this is an opportunity I can speak out. Mm-hmm. And it was hearing people say things, that this goes on and that there's places to go to get help. Mm-hmm. And that initial step is often scary. That's one of the things that we do. We have what we call the In the Stall campaign. And we have our basically a safety card for our crisis hotline, and it's in multiple languages. But we used to have them in the bathrooms hanging in a tear-off, and we actually had one of our guests at the shelter say, you know, I was even afraid to take that off at work because I was afraid somebody would walk in and see me tearing it off. Mm. So we actually developed a system where it actually goes inside the stall, and there's total privacy, and they can pick that up and stick it in there. It says, stick this in your shoe. Mm-hmm. So it's working with individuals and understanding what their needs are, too. And, you know, for those of us who may know somebody, and I can guarantee you know someone, mm-hmm. you know, it's to think that you don't, you're only fooling yourself, is being there and having that opportunity. Sometimes it's just saying, there is a place to go. Here's mm-hmm. a card. There is a place to go. And offering those safe opportunities for them to say something. Yeah. Because they're conditioned to respond, you know, just like going to the hospital or an emergency room. The old cases that you always hear about, talked about on TV, you know, I fell down the stairs, or, you know, this happened or that happened. And so you have to have that opportunity to feel safe, to where you can reach out. And that's what the crisis hotline, what the programs like ours do, and the opportunity to talk about it for a month. If people can hear it, and then they can go, you know, there is some place I can go. There is hope. There is help.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, too, and Mary Claire, maybe you could speak a little bit on this, about how much denial plays a factor in people who have either suffered from sexual abuse or assault or domestic violence. when people, I mean, if people are seeking out these services in our community, they must know that there's some kind of problem. But is there ever kind of a push to make people realize the situation that they actually are in, how serious it is?
I think that that's a possibility, but a lot of what we find with people that aren't coming forward and not really acknowledging what's going on in their lives is that they have a fear of being blamed. Mm-hmm. They have a shame factor that they feel like people are going to think ill of them if they put themselves in this situation, they put their kids in this situation, that judgment factor. So I think that that plays a big role in why people don't come forward. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not denial of an issue, because I think people, you know, are aware that this is wrong, but they might need to be reminded if they've been in that situation for a long time. So if I've been in an abusive relationship for, you know, 5 or 10 years, and then all of a sudden something's gone off that it's like, okay, I've had enough, mm-hmm. or I've hit that point, or it's no longer safe for my family or my children, I think that maybe that helps them to come forward, but I don't think it's necessarily denial. What do you think, Stephanie?
A huge characteristics of abusers in general is this inability to take responsibility for their actions and their behaviors. So more often than not, the actual abuse is blamed on that victim, right. That it's something that they did or they said or they didn't do or they didn't say, or that they didn't feed the children the right way. So oftentimes these victims are hearing for years and years about how everything that's going on is their fault. Mm. And it takes a really long time to support that victim and say, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. You can't be responsible for somebody else's behaviors and actions. So there's a tremendous amount of guilt, mm-hmm. and shame associated with victims.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Same thing with sexual assault. It's really we call it victim blaming. You know, we have a couple bumper stickers for sale at the Women's Bureau, if you're interested, that say don't blame the victim. And it's, you know, absolutely something that needs to be considered, because victims people say to them, well, what were you wearing? Mm-hmm. Why were you drinking? Mm-hmm. Were you out real late?
Right.
Were you walking in a dark alley? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's going on? You brought this on yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody brings on an assault. Mm-hmm. That's not something that you bring on.
Mm-hmm. And I think we experience the same thing with the domestic violence victims and survivors. You know, well, what did you do that made him go off? You know, or well, you shouldn't have done that, or mm-hmm. or she wouldn't have reacted that way. So there's definitely that same dynamic, you know, across.
Right. They're so similar. Mm-hmm. So similar. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more of Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. If you have a question or comment, we're dedicating this whole hour to Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an anonymous email at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
President Obama and Mitt Romney cram for the first presidential debate. An evening Chris Christie promises will turn this race upside down. Missouri's Todd Akin longs for the more ladylike Claire McCaskill of 2006, and balloting gets underway. It's early voting. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us from St. Louis. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
You. Hi, how you doing? Thanks for watching.
Hey. Character actor Stephen Tobolowsky was Bill Murray's annoying high school friend in Groundhog Day. He's also had recurring roles in Heroes, Deadwood, Californication, and Glee. We'll talk with Tobolowsky about his new memoir on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lutheran Hospital, serving patients and families with Northern Indiana's only heart and kidney transplant center. Information at lutheranhealth.net.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:32. If you have a question or comment, we're dedicating this whole hour to Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You can give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an anonymous note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. And to help me in today's conversation, I have Stephen Miller, Director of Development and Communication of the YWCA, as well as Stephanie Feldman of the YWCA, and Mary Claire Akers of the Women's Bureau. Thank you all so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sarah.
And we have a caller on line one. We have Mary with a question. Mary, welcome to Midday Matters.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your question.
I was calling because how would somebody be able to connect a male victim that's actually a teenager for services? It's a dating violent relationship, and so, you know, what services are offered for males in the area, and how would you really work with a teen that's a male?
All right, thank you so much for your question. Steve, you want to take that?
Well, we have a couple of different programs, and first one that I'd like to highlight is our preventative education program, which is targeting teens and young adults. And that's a program we call the Eyes Wide Open. Mm-hmm. It was actually developed and written by our staff at the YWCA and copyrighted. When we take that throughout the counties, and that's where we get a lot of just what the caller's talking about, individuals coming forward, or even parents when they take home the materials, mm-hmm. and we'll get a call from a parent saying, you know, I'm in this situation, my child brought this information home, what can I do? But what all people can do, no matter what age, what gender, mm-hmm. Is called the crisis hotline. We have individuals who are trained to handle crisis, and we get calls besides domestic violence that can direct them to the right course of action or to where they need to go. Now, if there's an immediate danger, don't bother calling the hotline.
Right.
Call 911. Mm-hmm. If you're in immediate danger of harm, then 911's the answer. But as far as with working with teens and stuff, once that's been identified, our case managers can work with those individuals if they've come forward and there's a situation that needs to be worked mm-hmm. with, as well as counselors such as like Women's Bureau was talking about mm-hmm. earlier that they can be hooked up with. But mm-hmm. the whole key for teens really right now, one of the things we're trying to focus on is prevention, understanding what a healthy relationship is and what an unhealthy relationship
right.
is.
And if you've already found yourself, if you are a teen, and like this caller said, it sounds like she has a male friend who is in a domestic violent relationship with a partner, and they're already there.
Mm-hmm.
The best step would be to call the crisis hotline.
Reach out to an adult
mm-hmm.
if they can't find an adult that they feel comfortable with, whether that be a teacher, a school counselor, a parent,
mm-hmm.
Reach out to them. If not, call the crisis hotline. Together, the adult and the child can call the crisis hotline. But when you start dealing with minors, you also have to make sure that they're taken care of from other standpoints as well. There's mm-hmm. a little bit of a different dynamic there. And I'll let Stephanie pick up from here. I almost went on to our speaker who's coming in to the Circle of Women this year is actually Johanna Zorico, who is uh-huh. from Ohio, who's helped pass a lot of laws because she was actually a victim of domestic violence. And her boyfriend actually came back after they broke up and she was raped and then shot in the face with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem she had at that time was a restraining order.
Hmm.
As a teenager, she could not get a restraining order to keep her abuser away from her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going a little too mm-hmm. far into the forest. Yeah. I'll bring it back and let Stephanie pick up with some of the concrete stuff.
It seems like if you're a teen, what I'm taking away is that you can't just do it by yourself.
That's correct.
You need to have a support system there.
And that's true for all victims of domestic mm-hmm. violence. The support mm-hmm. system is so critical, you know, and that's one of the factors. They say, well, why do they not go to the shelter, or why do they not call? Some actually have support systems where they can find safe shelter or safe mm-hmm. harbor. It may not need that necessary part of our program, but...
And they might need the tools to talk to their parents. So maybe their parents are supportive, but they don't want to say, you know,
absolutely,
my girlfriend Susie is beating me up. I don't know what to do, Dad. You know, maybe they have that issue with talking to their parents. And if they call and talk to them, maybe a hotline volunteer or hotline worker, they can say, well, you know, this is how you can approach this. And, you know, maybe if you went about it from this angle, your parents would be more understanding and less judgmental or whatever they're fearing talking to their parents
about.
And before we get too far ahead along, what is the hotline number for our listener who...
The hotline number is 1-800-441-4073.
Okay, great. And we'll post that on our Facebook page as well.
Absolutely.
And also case managers in community programs and Steps to Success, as well as in our crisis shelter, are very helpful in working with teens. We do have teens and younger children as clients, where we work with them on maybe what they've experienced as younger children or as teenagers. Just what Mary said is, you know, how do I have this conversation with my parents? How do I have maybe this conversation with a friend? Mm-hmm. And we can help them develop their skills and tools to have that conversation. And just like what Steve said, just that general education on unhealthy relationships, supporting that male teenager, really rewarding him for coming forward and thanking him for reaching out and recognizing that it was not easy for him to do because of several reasons. So really rewarding him on the strengths too would be really important.
And before we get too much further in, I want to make sure that our listeners know about all the different types of abuse that there are out there. So Stephanie, let's start with you. I understand that there are six. So if you could briefly let us know what those six are.
Absolutely. Well, the first, which most people recognize, is the physical. That could be, you know, the punching, hitting, kicking, biting. That could also be reckless driving, withholding medication, all different sorts of things that you might not think of. We also have the verbal. This is the name calling, the shouting. We have emotional, which is different from the verbal. Emotional is more of the mind games, the guilt, isolation, keeping victims from their friends and families, and doing it in a way that the victim doesn't know it's happening. There's also sexual abuse. There's financial and legal, which is, you know, not letting the victim work. So if she or he were to leave, they don't have any work experience. They don't have any job skills. Or, you know, threatening to report the abuse or the victim to DCS, filing for emergency custody first, filing for a protective order first. That is very common. And then there's also religious abuse. And oftentimes, we find that the victims are being held away from their place of worship or their personal beliefs. They're told that it's wrong, or there are certain scriptures used against them as the victim. And so that can be really hard because oftentimes their place of worship could be a place to go for support.
Right.
But if they're not being supportive of that relationship, if they're not understanding what's going on, then that can be another barrier for them.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the signs that folks should be aware of if they think that they might actually be in a domestic violent relationship, or, you know, that maybe their parent is, if they're living in a household that where that's going on. Steve, do you want to give us a little bit about some of the signs that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, there again, I'm not the expert, but yeah, one of the biggest ones I think that people don't realize, and for me is a whole thing in our society today, is is knowing and recognizing the people around us. And, you know, how many times do you hear anymore that people talk about, well, I don't even know who lives next door. So to know somebody is that first step. But some of the initial signs, and I'll let Stephanie speak more to it, but is what we work with in like the Eyes Wide Open, and especially for the kids, because I have a daughter, and you know, we always hear, oh, well, he's always texting, wanting to know where I am, you know, and I was going to go out with my friends, but you know, he was so sad because he wasn't going to get to spend time with me. Mm. And then, you know, so that some of the signs like that are really subtle. And especially when we don't understand what a healthy relationship is and what an unhealthy relationship is, it comes across as, oh, look how much he loves and cares mm-hmm. about me. Or look how much she loves. You know, every time I look at another girl, she slaps me across the shoulder. And maybe it's just playful to start with. You know, that's because she loves me so much. Mm. And so the real important part and what we try to hit with our educational programs that go out for prevention is understanding that healthy and unhealthy. And I'll let Stephanie go ahead and talk more about some of the actual signs that you can watch for in your coworkers, that your friends and your neighbors. And I'd also offer to any groups out there, we have several different education programs where we'll go into faith groups, to businesses, to organizations where, in fact, we have a program called Cut It Out that's for salons and how to recognize and how to work with that to understand the dynamics and be able to offer somebody assistance that might be coming through to have their hair done.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Steve makes a good point, and I think a very important one, that it often starts off as emotional and or verbal. It's very subtle. It's very slowly progressing, and it typically is not just the physical or the sexual right off the bat. You know, the abuser will be that knight in shining armor, or, you know, queen in shining armor, mm-hmm. and be that person that the victim needs them to be. And then slowly they will start to be verbally abusive or emotionally abusive, but to where the victim doesn't understand it's going on. And then it can progress to the legal, the financial, religious, and then typically when it gets to the physical and sexual is when it's become, you know, very serious and violent. And of course, every situation varies very differently, but generally it is very progressive and slow moving. If you have a family member, friend, coworker that has stopped maybe coming around, that is sticking to their partner a lot, it could be a sign of isolation and they don't understand it. You know, Steve said, you know, I don't want to hang out with my friends because he wants to hang out with me. And that's really common. And people often take that as, you know, he really wants to spend time with me, but really he's controlling her and he's starting to isolate her away from her support systems. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has really pulled away from friends or family, maybe has turned, you know, angry towards them for trying to help them, that's a good sign that another factor is at play. And for people, you know, who have family members or friends experiencing this, the best thing to do is continue supporting them, because when they are ready to talk, or they are ready to talk about their situation, they will need their support systems there. And a lot of times people don't leave because their support systems have left because mm-hmm. they've been isolated. Gotcha. So I would say that's a huge sign. Mm-hmm. And then of course it goes into, well, you know, I'm not allowed to work, you know, I need to quit my job because he's able to take care of me. And, you know, I didn't really like it either, but you know, this person really loved their job. They loved what they did. Signs that person is changing who they are. That signs that the emotional and the verbal abuse has really, changed them. Mm-hmm. And it's, going to become a serious situation.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's, you know, not to make it about the friends or family members that are observing it, but what a frustrating place to be at if you're seeing what seems like blatant mm-hmm. abuse and not being able to speak your mind and not know what to do other than to stand by the sidelines and be there for them. What other steps can folks take if they, you know, are pretty certain that something not right is going on? Mm-hmm. Is there anything, or is it time to wait and let them come to you?
No, absolutely. Having a conversation with a person is going to be really important in a non-judgmental, confrontational way to say, I'm worried about you. I'm afraid for your safety. I see you changing. I'm concerned about you and and who you're becoming or what's going on. I'm here for you to talk to. I'd like to support you. Here are some other people you can talk to if you don't want to talk to me. But always making sure the line of communication is open. Mm-hmm. So definitely, you know, talking to the person about your concerns, maybe they're not aware of it. And mm-hmm. maybe that conversation will help them self-reflect on what's happening in their relationships.
Mm-hmm. And another thing individuals can do if they're concerned about someone is they can actually call in to the crisis hotline. Mm. They can contact some of the case managers and they can help walk them through that. I have a situation because I've traveled throughout the counties as I do my work and had an individual who was concerned about a family member, and that's what we did. We put them in touch, and it took a year and a half before something actually occurred to where she could step forward and help that person. But the outside person also, I think, needs to be very cognizant of the danger and watching for, you know what, this is a time that I need to be very proactive. And for me, the whole control issue of an abuser over the person being abused is also, if the support system feels like they can't come forward or they feel like, oh, she wants me to stay away or he wants me to stay away, and they do that, then they in turn have also given that abuser the power. Mm. And that's what the whole dynamics of this is. It's the power dynamics. They have to have the control. They have to have the power. And just as this case I was talking about just a minute ago, that family member being there and just remaining in life, you know, mm-hmm. okay, they may not show up at the family activities, but I'm going to stop by just to say hi. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call. I'm not going to give up mm-hmm. and let him cut me out.
Right.
In this situation, let him cut me out of her life. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be focusing on some of the upcoming events during Domestic Violence Awareness Month, as well as some of the resources that the Women's Bureau and the YWCA has for folks who are either victims of domestic abuse or may have a friend or family member, loved one that is in a relationship that is unhealthy. That's what we're going to be focusing on in the last 10 minutes of our program today. If you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm.
A vagabond dreamer, rhymer, and singer of song.
10 years after Waylon Jennings died, a new release of his last recordings.
What would Waylon do? That was what I had written down on all my notes.
You feel Waylon's spirit. You know, he's not here with us, but it's very strong.
Waylon Revisited, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. Attorney General Greg Zeller visited Fort Wayne yesterday to announce a new public awareness project aimed at fighting prescription drug abuse. The project includes a new billboard on U.S. 30 warning residents that every 25 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose in the United States. The effort comes after the creation of the state-level Prescription Drug Abuse Task Force, which met for the first time in September. Allen County Health Commissioner Dr. Deb McMahon attended yesterday's announcement. She says stopping prescription drug abuse locally starts at home, but it's a team effort.
You don't have big problems without a lot of people creating the problems. And so you have maybe some issues that we need to do on the prescribing side, on the utilization side, we have some issues there, and then on the legal. You know, you have to have laws that support the good practice of health.
Attorney General Zeller says the task force hopes to present suggestions for legislation to help stem prescription drug abuse by the start of the next session of the Indiana General Assembly. A county official says the damage isn't as bad as it looks on a nearly 140-year-old covered bridge in northeastern Indiana that had its roof damaged when a too-tall semi-trailer drove through it. DeKalb County's insurance agent told the county council on Monday that the trucking company has been cooperative and seems to want repairs made to the Spencerville covered bridge as quickly as possible. County Highway Superintendent Eric Patton says repairs are estimated to cost about $115,000, and the damage will not get worse during the wait. The Indiana Republican Party is holding a presidential debate watch party today as President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney take the stage in Denver. The State Democratic Party will likely host an event for the second debate. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, party officials and political analysts say the local events are about more than just watching the debates.
State Republican Party spokesman Pete Seitz says the debate parties are a great way to connect with friends and fellow Republicans and experience the debates in a community setting. And he says from the party's standpoint, it's also a chance to recruit volunteers.
Dedicate and devote some hours to volunteer efforts, to making phone calls, to knocking on doors, to reaching out to their friends and their family and folks in their neighborhood to encourage them to vote for their candidate or their party of choice.
Franklin College Journalism School Director John Kroll says generating the kind of excitement and turnout the state had in 2008 with a competitive presidential race will be more difficult this year, with most polls showing Romney with a significant lead in Indiana.
You're not going to see quite the same energy. We're not getting basically, you know, the president hasn't come to Indiana, and Republican candidates seem to come here only to raise money and then take off.
Mr. Obama and Governor Romney will face off in three debates over the coming weeks, while the vice presidential candidates will debate once. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And don't forget, you can hear those debates tonight at 9 p.m. here on WBOI. And next Tuesday is the deadline for Indiana residents to register to vote in the November 6th general election. The Indiana Secretary of State's office says voters can register at indianavoters.in.gov, their local county clerk's office, or any Bureau of Motor Vehicles license branch. Now let's get back to Midday Matters Health 360 here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:53, and we just have about 7 minutes left in today's program. So if you have a question or comment, feel free to post on our Facebook page or send us an anonymous email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. You can always call us 260-452-1185. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the studio today with Stephen Miller, Director of Development and Communication at the YWCA, Stephanie Feldman of the YWCA, case coordinator there, and Mary Claire Akers, who is the REACT director for the Women's Bureau. And we've focused this whole hour on Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is the month of October. And Mary Claire, before we say goodbye, I wanted to make sure that we give the Women's Bureau information for any resources that you all can provide for people suffering from domestic violence, as well as any upcoming events you wanted to mention.
Okay, great. Women's Bureau is on the web at womensbureau.com. Our phone number is 424-7977. That gets you the whole bureau, so any questions you have, you'll be directed to the right person from that. One event that we are co-sponsoring this month is a human trafficking conference that's on October 11th, mm-hmm. and that is an all-day conference. It is free, and we have Teresa Flores is going to be the keynote speaker for that, and this whole conference is put on by the Mayor's Commission. And the Mayor's Commission works to end domestic violence, sexual assault, and sexual harassment in the Fort Wayne greater Fort Wayne area.
Mm-hmm. Great. And we've posted on our Facebook page the Women's Bureau's contact information as well as their website. So if you'd like to utilize any of their wonderful resources, you can just head over to our Facebook page, which is Midday Matters. And Stephanie, I'm going to jump back over to you so we can talk about some of the things going on at the YWCA this month of October.
We have a lot going on this mm-hmm. month, as you can imagine. We just had our Flowers on the River event mm-hmm. on Monday, and we are doing our Chalk It Up to Awareness the week of October 8th through 12th, and that's when we have schools, businesses, colleges use their sidewalks as billboards to end violence. And we have our YWCA National Week Without Violence, which is October 15th through the 19th. Mm-hmm. We have our Peace Story Time, which is also that same week of October 15th to 19th, where we gather in the libraries and schools throughout the area and read a story about nonviolence. This year's is Hands Are Not for Hitting. And we also have our Hope Awards, which is the last week in October 22nd to 26th. And each day we recognize an individual for advocacy in five categories, which are domestic violence, Empowerment of Women, Racial Justice, Junior Hope Award, and Child Advocacy. So if you have any questions or you want to nominate someone for a Hope Award or attend any of our events, all our information is on our website.
Which is ywc.org/NEIN.
You guys make a really good team.
Well, we all try to work together really well. And I would mention on the Mayors on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault conference coming up that we're a part of as well, the registration deadline is Friday.
So oh, yes. Sure, thank you for that reminder.
It is free, but the deadline is Friday, so you want to make sure you get your registration in. And the other thing going on that will be coming up in November is our Circle of Women, which is our annual luncheon, and our guest speaker will be Johanna Ozorko, who is a survivor of teen dating violence, and we'll be focusing on teen dating violence as well as some of the programs that we offer services to.
Mm-hmm. That's great. We have just about 2 minutes left in today's program, and I just wanted to give real quick for folks that joined us in the second half of the program just some basic phone numbers for resources that we have in town, as well as signs that people need to be aware of. Just a quick recap, Stephanie, of some of the signs people mm-hmm. should be aware of if they themselves are in a domestic violent relationship or they are witnessing somebody going through that.
Mm-hmm. Some classic signs are if someone apologizes a lot or has a lot of guilt for just everyday things, it's a sign that that's going on in the home. If they are, of course, being isolated from friends and family, if they've backed out of things that they normally enjoy doing, if they're having any sort of, you know, physiological changes that could be related to the stress and trauma that they're experiencing at home, and of course any signs of physical or sexual abuse that are present.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, one more time, could you give us the number to the crisis hotline?
The crisis hotline is 1-800-441-4073.
And again, that's on our Facebook page as well. And Steve, you mentioned earlier that this is not a number that just needs to be used for somebody who's going through the relationship that is unhealthy. If you need the resources to help be there for that person, you can also give a call.
Yeah, they can call the office, or if they remember the hotline number, they're welcome to call the hotline number. That's our crisis line is developed that way, so that whatever the need is, even if it's not domestic violence, that they can direct the person and get them to where they need to go. So I encourage people to utilize.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you so much to Stephen Miller and Stephanie Feldman of the YWCA and Mary Claire Akers of the Women's Bureau. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us, sir.
You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. We're streaming online at our new website, nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne. This episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted by the end of the day, NIPR.fm, as well as all of our Midday Matters shows are. So you can go over there and check it out and listen to anything that you may have missed during this week or in past weeks. Again, that's NIPR.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia. Thanks so much for listening to Health 360 Midday Matters this Wednesday. I'll be back same time, same place next Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. right here on WBOY. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.